Well, like I shared, I was visiting with my father after he got back from Baltimore, and when he got up this morning, he told me what my sermon should be about. I said, "Okay, Dad." He said, "You should start it out by saying, and being an obedient son, in the beginning of the new year, we will resolve to make a difference." I thought, yeah, that really sounds good. And then I recognized in the Unitarian Universalist Church that might cause a reaction to form a committee to see if the preacher has the power to make a resolution from the pulpit. So, I'm obedient, but it's not binding. But I do resolve and hope we all resolve to make a difference in our own spiritual lives and as well as our community and in the church. The question I will begin this year with for us as Unitarian Universalists is a question that is practiced in many meditations and deep thought, and it's a question that guides our psyches in a particular direction, and I believe in a mystical and freeing direction, and that is the question that we ponder and meditate upon. It is simply, who am I? And we travel down a path when we ask that question, who am I? And we use that as a period of reflection. And I thought about my first thought as I was reading some Unitarian Universalist history when I asked, who am I as a Unitarian Universalist? Now we all have that jokester inside of our heads. It would be to stand up and say, we're heretics. And there's truth to that, because in the 3rd century, Unitarianism was considered a heresy, and then in the 5th century, Universalism was considered a heresy. So as we begin our psychic identity, culture hands us certain things and certain ideas about ourselves. But when we wrestle with that question, who am I, I think we begin to get at the heart of spiritual growth. And then we have to ask the question, what is spiritual growth? We all have an idea of what spiritual growth is. And in many, say, like the recovery communities of the day or different things, we think spiritual growth may be to end an addiction. Spiritual growth may be to become less reactive in our relationships. Spiritual growth may be to become less angry. And I'm suggesting today these are aspects of spiritual growth. And I'm going to say they may even fall into the line of psychological growth. I think the heart of spiritual growth, when we look at our faith traditions, when we look at Christianity, when we look at Buddhism, when we look at the Native Americans, when we look at these traditions, the heart of spiritual growth is to move beyond the social constructs and understanding of who we are as individuals and a people. Spiritual growth pulls us beyond ourselves. Spiritual growth pulls us beyond, in a sense, the values that we have as a people. What is it like when we practice this meditation of who am I, and as we draw deep breath, I let go that I am an American. I let go that I am a Unitarian Universalist. I let go that I am a man. I let go that I am a woman. I let go that I am a son. I let go that I am a daughter. I let go of all those adjectives I use to describe myself. I let go that I am 54 and beginning to feel it. All those things that pull on us, all those things that anchor us into an identity. Spiritual growth is about letting go of those and moving past them, and experiencing ourselves beyond what we have been called, what we have been chosen to be. For an example of letting go of a social construct, what a term that is, a social construct. And I was thinking, how is that simple? How to make that simple? I mean, we look at past 8-10 years, we can get social constructs, I think, pretty easy, and look at how propaganda and things manipulate us. But to bring it home, so I'll tell on myself and my family just a little bit. My grandmother grew up in North Carolina, and she was the firstborn. And when I grew up, for most of my years, I grew up across the street from my grandmother. And the truth be told, which I'll tell the truth about it, she favored firstborn children. It's just true. And being the secondborn, I have a different experience of that truth than my brother, the firstborn. For example, when we grew up, we had an acre that we lived on, and she had an acre, and it was our job to cut the grass. And I could cut 1 3/4 acres. My brother could cut 1/4 acre. She would bring lemonade out to my brother and thank him. I would get nothing. True experience. One time we walk up to her house, and she said, in here there's a snake in where the washer and dryer were, which is an outside room attached to the house. So my brother looks at me and says, "You go on and move the washer and dryer around, and I'll take the stick and move it, you know." And see, so I do it, you know. Like, didn't even think, right? Which is a social construct, not thinking, just doing it. Because if I were beyond my social construct, I'd have said, "You go in and get the snake." I'm not gonna. But no, I was in the social construct, right? So I go in, and it was a hot summer day in Atlanta, Georgia, and I am sweating like a dog, and we move everything around, and he's standing there watching me. And so I get done. And I say, I can't find a snake. And my grandmother says, "Well, thank you, Bruce," to my brother. And we were adult men. And we look at each other and laugh. And thank goodness he and I could get beyond it. My uncle, her oldest son, said to her, said, "Mom, I think Gregory had something to do with that." Even that is a social construct. Spiritual growth is moving past that. And believe me, that's not an easy one to move past, because that one's installed while I'm in the womb. And we all have family of origin roles and scripts we play and get trapped in. Spiritual growth is learning to move beyond those. But how do we, as a people, as a faith tradition, understand ourselves? Because in that definition of spiritual growth, by definition, it means moving beyond our faith tradition. It means growing past our own faith tradition. But yet we cling to faith traditions for security, to help us bind anxiety, for guidance, for values, so that we know that we are like-minded, so that we can get along better, and we can understand and trust that you're going to believe a particular way and I'm going to believe a particular way when we meet, and that's going to frame our argument, our debate, and not, and we know we're basically going to be polite, and our faith tradition moves us in that direction. Yet spiritual growth calls us to move past that. What an odd thing, that way of understanding spiritual growth. I'm suggesting today that in order to really grasp the meaning of that spiritual growth, we have to have a long view of history. And in this fall, past fall, I've been talking about having a long view, a long world view, a 50,000 year world view at least, so that I can step, say, on a timeline that's 50,000 years old and imagine, which is exercising our spiritual imaginations, and imagine the time when human beings first began to think symbolically, when human beings first began to use metaphor, when human beings first began to put stories together to make meaning for life. There was a time when human beings did not do that, and then there was a time when human beings did do that. But when human beings first started making meaning and putting stories together for meaning, there were no social constructs. There were no ideologies. There was no sense of being an American, being superior in race. There was no sense of we're right, you're wrong. There was no sense of over and against. There was just the beginning. And if we can allow ourselves to step back on that timeline and to look on that timeline, we can begin to see the formation of how human beings began to think and put who they believe they were together and put their stories together and put their meanings together. And in a sense, if we can do that, we begin to separate ourselves from the social constructs and from self-understandings that we value, but that we also know has some sabotaging aspects to them. We become other than who we believe we are if we can exercise our imaginations in that way. Then I can step into what I choose to become in this life, not what's put on me to become in this life. For example of what that might mean in terms of a faith community, I know if you remember the story of Buddha when he and his wife were traveling through the city in which they lived, and they came across poverty. They came across people suffering. This was the first time that his wife, Yashodhara, really saw that. How many of us see poverty, see need, see suffering, and continue to walk by? How many of us have normalized what one day we might have seen and would have called us to action? One day in our lives, we may have seen suffering, poverty, hurtfulness, and our spirit would have moved to action. But this life that we have lived and this culture that we live in, we see the same thing and we are no longer called to action. Our sense of service and our sense of being servants to one another somehow has been dull and numb in this life. The world is protesting what some consider an atrocity today. An invasion of space militarily. And I read about it. Is my sense of service called to any type of action when I try to understand the horror that some people experience? So Yashodhara saw this poverty, this suffering, and she had a good life. She was the wife of a prince, the son of a king. It would have been nice to have returned to that life. But when she saw need, she was moved. And her life moved into a story, a narrative in which she became a servant to those people who were suffering and a servant to those people in need. She left the social construct of protection and risked and participated in the poverty of others in a way that would help them. What do we do with that notion of servanthood? What do we do in our community? What do we do in our church with that notion of servanthood? We've lived at least 30 years with the notion of conservative compassion. And yet at the same time, poverty in our culture has increased. It seems that belligerence, if you watch television, belligerence is celebrated, and those who use shame, put down messages to others are paid extremely well and have large audiences, and yet addiction seems to be up. Unemployment is up. Our culture deteriorates. And we motor on. When we see need, where is our calling to serve? What does our spiritual growth look like as Unitarian Universalists historically? Yeah, there was a moment in time when Unitarianism was pretty much a Christian faith, solidly, except they did not believe that Jesus was God the Creator. And that was the distinction that they made. If you look at interesting, which I find humorous, but maybe not humorous, of this sense of spiritual growth of people moving beyond their social construct, people moving beyond their roles and scripts. If we look at the history of Unitarian Universalism, say from 1850 to 1894, in 1853, the American Association of Unitarianism affirmed Christianity. In 1854, affirmed Christianity. In 1867, the Free Association began to say, wait a minute, by affirming a particular religious belief, we're placing the creeds of that belief as superior than other belief systems. So here we have a community closing up their belief systems. When we don't sense our sense of service, when we don't sense that sense of call to action, when we see need, have we closed up our spiritual imaginations? Have we shut down our spiritual imaginations? When we cling to tradition and beliefs of tradition, whether it's because I was second born or because I find it in a religious community, do I close up my call to service? And in 1894, the National Conference met and they chose and decided that the importance of the love of God and the love of humanity, but did not affirm any Christian text. What you have when you look at Unitarian Universalist history is a perpetual moving beyond itself. That's a problem in some ways. How many of you remember an experience when you first began hearing words that challenged your belief system? How many of you remember that experience? I've shared this several years ago. I'll share it again. I can remember defending Elvis Presley against the Beatles. After all, Elvis was an American and the Beatles were not. After listening to the music, it was a crack in my belief system. Because they were good, right? Fun to listen to, right? I can remember during the Vietnam War, distinctly, when I heard, and if some of you will remember the nightly reporting of the deaths and the horror and the tragedy, and my brother's 5 years older than me and worrying about that, and I was graduated from high school in 72, the last number drafted, so I had some interest in doing that. And I was, you know, an American and believe that if we were in a war, we were in a war for democracy and in a war for the right things and the good things. And I can remember distinctly hearing the news that somehow, and this is how it's in my head, and symbolically I believe it's correct, but literally probably not correct, that LBJ was paving roads in the middle of the jungle. And for me, that cracked the system. Because I thought, what do they need roads in the jungle for? And then I thought, they're making money by putting roads in the jungle. I guess they need transport. I don't know the reality of that, but I know at that moment in time, my psyche cracked. And I think those moment in times are absolutely crucial for spiritual growth. That somehow we put ourselves in an environment where we hear words and we hear thoughts and we hear statements that crack open our psyches, that challenge our belief systems, that challenges our worldview. I can remember my father sharing with me, he's a union man, that the first George Bush wasn't such a bad president. He actually did some good things. I don't know why he didn't share the good things he did. He probably did better the first time he ran against Bill Clinton. Now, I'm shocked. How could he say that? So my worldview gets expanded when I put myself in a company of people that have a more balanced view when I want to be passionate one way or another way. Sometimes when I've preached in here about corporations, and naturally generalizing all corporations are evil and of the devil, you know, afterward, somebody stands up and says, "Gregory, maybe that's not so." And it's good that somebody stands up and says, "Maybe that's not so. Maybe there's a balanced view." Who are we going to be as Unitarian Universalists this year? How are we going to attend to our spiritual growth and also our place in this community at the same time? The greater the pressure in a culture to believe a particular way, and I think in our culture there is a strong emphasis and lots of money spent on us believing a particular way as citizens. It doesn't matter the labels of the groups. There is a larger system going on that pressures us to be a particular way. Look at the reaction to Jimmy Carter's book about the Palestinians. When we see what's going on now and we read that book, it sounded like a pretty accurate description. But the culture as a whole, not as a whole, but the loud voices were pretty oppressive to him and pretty hurtful to him for speaking the truth. My experience is when there's pressure for people to be a particular way, either people go with that pressure or they solidify what they know to be true in a very rigid and solid way in order to stand over and against and push back. If we do that, I believe we have failed our faith tradition. We must speak to the intrusiveness of propaganda. We must address it. We must study it. We must understand it. But if we allow a movement to solidify with rigidity our own interpsychic selves so that we can't hear any more new information, we'll get stuck. There'll be no spiritual growth, and there'll be no response that really makes sense. There'll be loud, passionate response. The calling of being a Unitarian, a Universalist, is to help us breathe deep in times of crisis, to help us claim our truest selves and look at our history and how people moved through the social constructs and yet maintain their sense of identity and maintain their sense of kindness and compassion and moved in a direction that did express this love of humanity even in times of crisis. So how are we this year as a church and as individuals going to attend to our spirituality and at the same time speak to the ills and at the same time affirm what is good? Is that not our challenge for this year?